Chapter 24, The Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Turks attack. The Byzantine Empire resisted Muslims and Mongols. It stood strong against Russians and a dozen other invaders. But when the Ottoman Turks attacked, the great city of Constantinople was finally forced to open its gates. At first, the Ottoman Turks were just a ragged band of nomads who wandered through the center of Asia, hunting for their food and fighting with their neighbors. When the Mongol armies began to sweep across Asia, the Turks fled to the west. They wandered through mountains and across deserts, looking for a new place to live. On their journeys, they attacked villages and stole food. But they also traded with Muslim merchants, heard the Quran read, and became Muslims. Soon these nomads settled down on the edge of the Byzantine Empire. They began to build houses and plant farms, gardens, and orchards. They got up with the sunrise and worked hard to grow crops in the hard, stony ground of their new home. Some Turks became shepherds and wandered with their sheep from pasture to pasture, looking for fresh grass and selling butter, cheese, and wool as they went. Other Turks traveled through their little kingdom, entertaining each village with stories, songs, and dancing bears who shuffled in time to music. One of the stories told by these traveling entertainers describes the rough, rocky ground of the land where the Muslim Turks now lived. This Turkish legend is called the Sheep Rocks. One hot, dry day in summer, a shepherd decided to take his flock to the cool slopes of the mountain above him. So he herded the sheep along the winding, dusty road, climbing up farther and farther. Sweat rolled down his face, and his throat grew drier and drier. Slowly, the air grew cooler. Finally, the shepherd halted at a green, breezy field high on the mountainside. The sheep put their heads down and started to tear up the juicy grass, and the shepherd threw himself down to rest. But he was so thirsty that he soon got up and started to search for water. He looked and looked, but there was no water, not even a single drop. "Allah," the shepherd cried out, "send me water, and I promise that I'll sacrifice 7 of my best sheep to you. Only keep me from dying of thirst." At once, a clear fountain of water gushed out of the earth at his feet. He bent down and drank, and the sheep crowded around him and drank their fill as well. But once his thirst was quenched, the shepherd couldn't bring himself to fulfill his vow. He said to himself, "Well, instead of killing 7 of my sheep, I'll kill 7 of the insects that live in their wool. Well, that's just as good a sacrifice." So he searched through the thick wool of the fattest sheep and found 7 lice. He lined them up and squashed each one and dropped them into the water. "Here is my sacrifice," he announced to Allah. At once the shepherd and all of his sheep turned into stone. When he didn't return home, the men of his village came out to search for him, but all they found was a green pasture filled with rocks and a stream bubbling quietly up from the ground. Not all of the Turks were farmers and shepherds, though. Many were fierce, disciplined warriors who were determined to make the Turkish kingdom larger. Devout Muslim families often raised their young men to become Ghazi, Muslim soldiers who were dedicated to conquering unbelievers and spreading Islam. These warriors set out to increase the size of the Ottoman Turk kingdom and spread Islam at the same time. The kingdom of the Turks became larger and larger. Under the leadership of their king, called the Sultan, the Ottoman Turks attacked the borders of the Byzantine Empire again and again. City after city fell to their armies. The Byzantine Empire shrank, while the empire of the Ottoman Turks grew. Soon only Constantinople was left to the Byzantine emperor. The people of Byzantium retreated behind its walls as the Turks attacked. But the 3 thick walls defeated the Turkish warriors. They could not get through. So they retreated, leaving the emperor in charge of his city. The people of Constantinople began to believe that their city could not be captured. "The city will only fall when the moon turns dark," they told each other. But the Turks had not retreated for good. They were making plans for a new assault on Constantinople's walls. The capture of Constantinople. After years of fighting and conquering, The Turkish armies had expanded the borders of the Ottoman Empire to an enormous size. And as the Ottoman Empire expanded, the Byzantine Empire shrank. Now the Byzantine Emperor only had one city to call his own, Constantinople. The Turks had attacked it again and again, but could not break through its walls. But then a new sultan came to the Ottoman throne, Mehmed the Conqueror. From the moment he became sultan, Mehmed was determined to take Constantinople for his own. But he was a crafty warrior. He spent months pretending to be on good terms with the Byzantine emperor, sending friendly messages to the court. But all the time, he was planning to attack. He was building cannons so huge that each cannon had to be pulled by 100 oxen. He was preparing to fight with gunpowder, which the Byzantine army didn't know how to use. He was hiring mercenaries, paid soldiers from other countries. And he was quietly assembling his army, ready to send his warriors against Constantinople in a final attempt to take the city. When the Byzantine emperor realized that Mehmed was preparing for war, he sent messengers to protest. Mehmed cut off their heads. The war had begun. Mehmed marched his armies up to the western wall of the city, the only wall that could be reached by land. Remember, Constantinople was surrounded by water on three sides. He sent a message to the emperor, inviting him to surrender. The Byzantine soldiers inside Constantinople were outnumbered by Mehmed's Turkish army 12-1. But the emperor refused to give up without fighting, so Mehmed began to fire his cannon against the wall. The defending soldiers didn't know how to guard their city against these loud, destructive new weapons. The cannonballs cracked the walls and crumbled the tops of the towers. The wall stood firm, though. Cannonballs alone wouldn't bring Constantinople down. Mehmed knew that the only way to conquer the city was to surround it with his warships and attack it from all sides. But although he had his troops lined up along the western wall and his warships attacking the southern wall from the water, he couldn't reach the northern wall of Constantinople. The only way to get to this northern wall was to sail his ships up into the Golden Horn, the harbor, a deep, quiet body of water where ships can anchor on the city's north side. But the entrance to the Golden Horn was guarded by Byzantine ships, and the Ottoman warships couldn't break through. One morning, the Byzantine armies were gazing over the western walls when they saw an extraordinary sight: ships sailing on land. Mehmed had ordered his armies to attach hundreds of ropes to the warships anchored on the southern side of the city. Thousands of men and cattle hauled on these ropes to pull the warships up onto the land, right past the western wall of the city, down into the northern waters. 70 ships traveled past the horrified onlookers and slid right down into the Golden Horn, far away from the Byzantine ships guarding the other end of the harbor. Now the Turks could attack the city from all sides. As the fighting continued, the city began to run out of food. Water became scarce. Some of Constantinople's people tried to escape from the city late at night when the Turkish camp was asleep. But others said, "Constantinople won't fall. Remember, the city is safe until the moon turns dark." Almost 2 months after the siege began, the Turkish army lay outside Constantinople, waiting for morning. The moon shone brightly down, casting long, clear shadows next to the tents. Suddenly, the moon began to disappear, a little at a time, as though some enormous creature were slowly eating it away. The Turkish soldiers began to murmur and point, and then to shout with joy. And inside the city, the Byzantine defenders were struck with horror. Was this a sign of disaster? Actually, it was an eclipse. The earth had moved between the sun and the moon, blocking the sun's light so that it could not reflect from the moon's surface. But no one knew this. The Muslim Turks and the Byzantine Christians both thought that the eclipse predicted the end of the war. The Turks began to prepare for a final attack. the priests in Constantinople held a final Christian service in the Hagia Sophia, the great Christian cathedral built by Justinian hundreds of years before. The last Byzantine emperor attended this service and then went out to join his soldiers in their fight against the invaders. The Turks threw themselves against the walls. Finally, one of the gates to the city was forced open. Mehmed, seeing the defenders fall, shouted to his men, "Friends, we have the city!" The Ottoman Turks poured into the city. The emperor was killed in the fighting, and the Turks flooded through Constantinople, stealing and killing. Some of the troops turned to the houses of the rich, writes the Greek historian Critovolus, who lived during this time. They robbed the wealthy. Others looted the churches. They threw crosses and holy cups into the street and broke them into fragments and burned holy books. And still more went to the houses of the people. They stole, plundered, murdered, and took slaves, men and women, children and old people, priests and monks. 10,000 terrible deeds were done. Mehmed went straight to the Hagia Sophia and set his throne right in the middle of it. His men began to make the cathedral into a Muslim mosque. 4 days after the last Christian service in the Hagia Sophia, the first Muslim service was held there, and the city of Constantinople was renamed Istanbul, a name it still bears today. The fall of Constantinople is one of the great events of medieval history. From this moment on, the way of life begun by the Romans centuries ago was truly over. The last remnants of the old Roman Empire had disappeared. Sometimes the conquest of Constantinople is called the end of the Middle Ages. Suleiman the Lawgiver. Now the Ottoman Turks had the largest empire in the world. It covered the Middle East and spread into North Africa. Constantinople, now called Istanbul, was their capital city. The Ottoman Turks repaired the broken walls, laid new stones down over the streets, and dug new wells. They reopened the harbors for trade. Soon the countries around them were recognizing the Sultan of the Turks as one of the most powerful rulers in the world. "No one doubts that you are now the Emperor of Rome," wrote one scholar to the Sultan. "Constantinople is the center of the Roman Empire, and whoever rules Constantinople is emperor." The greatest emperor and sultan of all was Suleiman. Suleiman was named after the Hebrew king Solomon, the wisest ruler of ancient times. Just like his namesake, he became known all over his kingdom for his fairness. Suleiman wanted to make sure that all the people of his country were treated fairly, and that the laws he passed were followed. This was a big task. In an empire as large as the Ottoman Empire, there were many different courts in many different villages and cities, and different parts of the empire sometimes followed different laws. So Suleiman took all the different laws that the Ottoman people followed and put them together into one set of laws that his whole empire would follow. Justinian, the great Byzantine emperor, had done the same thing when he came to the throne of Byzantium. Both of these great rulers knew that they could only hold their large empires together if everyone had the same set of laws to obey. Suleiman went one step further than Justinian. He chose governors who would supervise the different parts of his empire and make sure that his new laws were followed. But he wanted to make sure that these governors were being just. So he would dress in disguise so that no one knew who he was and travel around his empire watching all of his governors to make sure that they were behaving properly. And that's not all. Suleiman also had the largest spy network in the world. His spies lived all through the empire, keeping an eye on all of the empire's officials. They told him whenever an official was acting unjustly. The spies also told Suleiman whether or not he was popular. The Sultan knew that he could only be a good ruler if his people liked him, so he told his spies to go listen to Friday prayers all over the empire. Muslim worshippers pray every day, but on Fridays They are supposed to pray that their sultan will live a long time and be healthy. The spies were supposed to tell Suleiman whether or not his people prayed for him on Fridays. If everyone prayed that the sultan would live a long time and be healthy, Suleiman knew that his people liked him and wanted him to go on ruling. But if they decided not to pray for him, Suleiman knew that he was in trouble. Suleiman wasn't just the head of his empire. He also declared that he was caliph, the head of all the Muslims in the entire world. Not all of the world's Muslims agreed that Suleiman should be their spiritual leader. But Suleiman had an advantage. His empire had spread to include Mecca, Medina, and Jerusalem, the three holiest cities in Islam. Any Muslim pilgrim who wanted to travel to a holy city had to enter Suleiman's empire. So when Suleiman announced, "I am the caliph," no one argued with him too loudly. Suleiman was just as careful to be a good spiritual leader as he was to be a good emperor. Old stories tell us that although Suleiman had guaranteed all pilgrims a safe journey to the holy cities in his empire, he hadn't bothered to rebuild the walls around Jerusalem, which had been destroyed during the Crusades. One night, Suleiman was sleeping when he had a dreadful dream. He was standing on the plain in front of Jerusalem, watching pilgrims go into the city, when two huge golden lions appeared from behind the city's walls, snarling at him. He tried to run, but the lions pounced on him and started to tear him apart, and a voice said sternly to him, "This has happened because you have not protected the holy city of Jerusalem." When Suleiman woke up, he thought, "That dream came from God. It is a command to rebuild the wall around Jerusalem." He ordered his craftsmen and masons to start to work at once on a thick, strong wall to protect the holy parts of Jerusalem from any invasion. And he also commanded them to build a gate in this wall with a carved lion on either side as a reminder of his dream. Today, the Lion Gate still stands in Jerusalem. By the time Suleiman died, he ruled over so much land that he called himself Slave of God, Master of the World, Shah of Baghdad and Iraq, Caesar of all the lands of Rome, and Sultan of Egypt. Actually, Suleiman's empire never spread over to Italy, where Rome stood, but he did rule the largest empire in the world, and the rest of the world called him Suleiman the Magnificent. After Suleiman's death, his son inherited his throne. But this new sultan was a weak ruler. His people called him the drunkard because he spent more time at parties than he did running his country. The Ottoman Empire began to shrink. It lasted for more than 300 years before it disappeared completely. But never again was it as powerful as it had been under Suleiman the Magnificent.